it's wonderful to run out. It's like Sunday morning when you run out of worship bulletins. That's great, because you got more people than you planned on. tell you a little bit about myself. I pastor a small church about an hour west of here in Greenfield, New Hampshire, in the Monadnock region. And it's out in the middle of nowhere. The town is has about 2,000 people in it. I pastor the only church in town, and the church has been the only church for 227 years. About 10 years ago, we lost our meeting space, our church sanctuary. Long story, I won't go into it. We were looking for a place to worship. And I was chaplain and have been both at the church and chaplain at the Crotchet Mountain Center. Anyone heard of the Crotchet Mountain Center? Okay. Crotchet Mountain Center is in Greenfield as well, up on top of a mountain, on top of Crotchet Mountain. About 1,400 acres up there. Anyway, back to my story. So we went to the CEO and so on of Crotchet Mountain and said, could we worship here? And he had some of the vice presidents there and so on, and said, absolutely, you can. And so we worship in an auditorium and conference center at the Crotchet Mountain Center. And we have been doing that for 10 years. The Crotchet Mountain Center is a center for people with severe disabilities. We're usually talking about four or five different disabilities. We have a school, we have a gymnasium, swimming pool, indoor pool, we have 14 group homes, all on top of this mountain, 1,400 acres. We have, if anyone's ever interested in this, we have, I'm pretty sure this is still true, the only accessible hiking trails, and the longest in the United States. So it's all wheelchair accessible. There's two different trails. It's wonderful. Even if you just want to go out and walk the trails. One goes to the top of Crotchet Mountain, and you get to see the whole area, beautiful view. One of the trails goes down, and it's more of a wildlife trail. You go around a little pond and a swamp area and all of that. So we have been worshiping at the Crotchet Mountain Center for 10 years. That means, different than churches, most churches, it wasn't inviting people with disabilities into our sanctuary, worship space, whatever. We were in their space. And so that was different. So we've had lots of families. We've had come and worship with us staff. By the way, we have at Crotchet Mountain one of the one of the most ethnically diverse staffs in the state of New Hampshire, which some of you are from other places, you might say, well, that's a big deal. New Hampshire really isn't all that ethnically diverse, but we have one of the most ethnically diverse
how many times can you say that?
Staff, yeah, not many. Staffs in the state. So we have a lot of folks, we have a lot of recent immigrants who are coming to work for us. I also chair the ethics committee at Crotchet Mountain Center. And so every new group of employees that come in, they go through a three-week orientation. An hour of that is I'm invited in to teach on ethics. How do we know what's right? How do we know what's wrong? Especially as dealing with disabilities and so on. So anyway, that's kind of a little bit sad. I've been pastor of the church and chaplain for 31 years. And it was interesting, Pastor Dave talked about how you get into special needs disability ministry. They don't teach, or they didn't. I hope they're doing different in seminary today, but I heard nothing about disability ministry in seminary. 35 years ago, whatever it was. I had a little experience. I had an uncle who had Down syndrome, And I also had a cousin who had Down syndrome as well. So I knew a little bit about that, but not a whole lot. And so when I was hired at the Greenfield Covenant Church, they said, oh, yes, and by the way, you're chaplain at Crotchet Mountain. What does that mean? Well, you go up and you do a weekly service. We really don't know much about it, but go do it. I was scared to death. I don't know anything about this. I went on Tuesdays, and I have to tell you, I dreaded Tuesdays. I have to be very honest with you. It was like, oh, no, I got to go to Crotchet Mountain again. You know. Now my Tuesdays are the day I look most forward to. After 31 years, how God has worked to change all that. Mm. It's amazing. And I got involved with Johnny and friends several years ago. Took a week-long course at Gordon Conwell called Beyond Suffering. And someone got the Bible.
That was me.
That was you, the Beyond Suffering Bible. Yes. I took the course on Beyond Suffering. And kind of got to know some people and Johnny and friends. I'd heard about Johnny years ago. Billy Graham and all that. I'm old enough for that. Some of you aren't. But anyway, and then again, God just kind of worked the whole thing and then get a call. Would I like to teach during one of the camps, one of the retreat camps? And I said, yeah, I guess I would. So I did. And then the next year I was asked if I would pastor the June retreat, which is the retreat for adults and their families, adults with disabilities and their families. So that's how I got involved. It's just I'm amazed at how God has done this. I never had any intention of getting involved in disability ministry. That wasn't my plan. But it was God's plan. So anyway, then I was asked if I would say a few words today about practical compassion and helping hands, ministering to special needs families. And as I was doing this, just putting this together and thinking about it and so on, and we were having that conversation at lunch. John and I and his wife were having the conversation at lunch. Special needs, I think, is so much more. When I think of special needs, I think of physical special needs, wheelchair, whatever, autism, that kind of thing. But in pastoring, and we came to the conclusion that there's times when all of us are special needs, right? So what happens when you're dealing with cancer? My daughter, a year ago, who's 40, was diagnosed with breast cancer. For the next year, she went through all the stuff, the surgery, the chemo, the radiation, all that. Thanks be to God, she seems to be doing okay at this point. But that's a special needs time, isn't it? But when my dad had Alzheimer's, and dealing with that, that's a really tough thing to deal with. Alzheimer's is, well, not anything is a, you know, but it steals the person from you. It really does. Gradually takes that person from you. And how do you deal with that? It's tough. It's really tough. So, in my own personal experience with disability, special needs. Several years ago, my wife had a stroke. Fortunately, thanks be to God, she was not left with any physical symptoms or whatever of the stroke, okay? She initially had some paralysis, but medication and rehab and all that, it went away. But one thing I learned in all that is she has some cognitive issues. So making choices is really hard for her. So I have to have lots of patience if I go grocery shopping with her. You know, like, it doesn't matter to me what can of vegetables you buy, but it matters to her. And, you know, one of the other things I've learned with that is physical disabilities, people see but my wife, her disability, you can't see. Mm-hmm. And people tend to have less patience with that, I think. It's like, come on, lady, make up your mind, you're holding up the line, or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's not only have I been ministering in the area of disability, personally I've experienced some of that as well. So as I thought about disabilities and practical, compassionate, how can we help kind of things, I actually came up with three things, and they're fairly simple, and it's Pastor Dave, he's back there, we were talking at the end of this morning session, saying this really follows well with what Pastor Dave had to say. Came up with three things. And the three things are listen, prayer, and then action. So those are the three things that I came up with. We're going to talk about those a little bit. Listen. And it's more than just standing there nodding your head, okay? Really listen. Really internalize what the person's saying. And I have to tell you, I think our culture, society, does very little of this. We don't listen. Some of that we maybe can blame on social media and all that, I don't know, but we don't listen. We don't listen to people. Ask people to share their story. Tell me your story. You know, people feel really blessed that someone cares enough to say, tell me your story. Right? Generally, when we say, how are you doing, we don't want to know. Right? We say, oh, I'm doing fine. Okay, great. Glad to hear it. And we walk off. That's, you know, ask people to share their story. What's going on with you? What's really happening? Share that with me. Or I invite you to share it with me. Share your struggles. Where are you struggling? I mean, a lot of this is just ministry anyway. I mean, you know, I think we talked about that this morning. It's just like, it's ministry. It's, you know, tell me where your struggles are. By listening, you connect with the person and you discover ways to minister. Listen. This is something I found. When you ask a special needs parent, how's everything going? Yeah. Maybe that's a lot of us. Maybe it's not just the special needs parents. It's like, how's things going? These are some things that people have said to me. Obviously, my role as chaplain at Crotchet Mountain Center. I get to deal with families. Had one this week. Mom called me and said, I'm having a really rough time. My son's at Crotchet Mountain. I mean, I've had parents say to me, and I can understand this, the hardest decision I ever made was to place my son, daughter, at Crotchet Mountain Center. You know, been in the home, been able to take care of him, now I can't. In this case, you know, was telling me that you know, her son did pretty well, pretty happy kid. Then he reached puberty, and everything changed. And just couldn't do it. It wasn't safe. It wasn't safe for him, her son, and it wasn't safe for her. So here's your child that you've just loved and put all this stuff and, you know, all this energy into and love into, and then you're turning them over to an institution. And no matter how good that institution may be, and I think Crotchet Mountain generally does a pretty good job, it's hard. How could you so, things that folks have said to me. I just need to be listened to without being judged. You shouldn't feel that way, you know. That's that good. I had someone say to me, feelings just are. You know, what you do with them, that's the issue. But don't tell me I shouldn't feel this way. So for me to say to this mom, oh, you know, you just relax, you're way too uptight, everything's wonderful, you know, just, you know, listen without being judgmental. And maybe I just need to vent. That's it. All I want you to do is sit there and listen to me vent. And are you willing to do that? I need you to understand when I say that I'm physically and emotionally exhausted. So many parents of special needs dealing with disabilities are there. I have a book. It's an excellent book. On caregiving, it's called The 48-Hour Day. And I don't remember, I tried to find it in my library yesterday and I couldn't. I hope I didn't loan it out to somebody and they didn't bring it back. But anyway, The 48-Hour Day, that's what it feels like. So try to understand that I'm physically and emotionally just exhausted. I need you not to judge me, but just listen to me. I like the first one. I just need someone to listen and care. Most importantly, I need you to listen and know that with all my needs, I never stop loving my child and feel so blessed he's mine. Even though I'm exhausted, even though I'm venting, please don't think that means that I don't love my child. That I don't feel my child's a blessing. Okay? So listen. Any questions, insights, anything? I think that's one of the... If we can do that, yeah. And I found, kind of expanding this, in the church, when there's people who are disgruntled or whatever, so often, just if they feel like I'm listening to them, that makes such a difference. We may not agree, but I feel like I've been heard. I feel like someone's listening to me.
So can I ask you, what kinds of things did you say to that mom? I mean, what would be acceptable things to say to her?
Last week?
Yes.
Well, we actually went to the group home where her son is.
Okay.
He was not having a good day.
Okay.
Particularly. And I spent about an hour there with her. Coming up on the next thing. I prayed with her.
Okay.
I also, we talked about maybe ways. One of her big concerns is his faith. Mm-hmm. And how do you, you know, what could we do to form his faith in Christ? You know, the things we could do. So we talked about... I have a stack of CDs that are Sunday school songs. Or maybe listening to that would help to calm him. And, you know. And then we talked about, you know, Bible stories, children's. He has a, according to his mom, he has a cognitive ability, I think she said, of 4 or 5. And so... some Bible stories that maybe he, you know. And I think and I hope that just her knowing that I'm there. And she has my phone number. Those things help.
So I'm just wondering, I am a mom of a special needs child, but I'm just wondering, when somebody is you know, you're listening to them, and they go into a great deal of detail and tell you all about their day, and you can see that it's really hard. I mean, do you say something like, you know, I can see this is really hard for you, or
sure.
I can, do you put it in terms of, I understand this is hard for you, or is that going to set them up?
I try never,
to say,
in any ministry situation, I try never to say, I understand what you're going through.
Okay.
Because even if I've been through something similar,
okay.
It's not the same.
Okay.
You know, and I think, yeah, people can say, no, you don't understand.
Right,
and you know what? I don't understand what it's like.
Right. Okay.
I don't understand what that's like for that mom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I can try, I can be compassionate, but I don't understand it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, just being, you know, I think the great scriptural example is the book of Job and Job's friends. They did great for what, 3 days? They sat with Job and they didn't say a word. When did they get in trouble? When they opened their mouth, yes. When they started talking. I think that can be the same for us, you know, because we can hand out those Christian cliches. In all things, God works for good to those who love him and called according to his purpose, you know. That kind of goes with anything, and, you know, we can say all the, and I believe that, but we can say all the right things at all the wrong times. Yes.
Can I just add as a single mom of two special needs guys, just validate her feelings.
Yep.
You know, and say, I can't imagine what you're going through.
Yeah, I don't understand what you're going through.
You know, what God does. And
yeah.
Feelings, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that story from Job always strikes me powerfully, that it was when he started when their friends started talking that they got in trouble. Sometimes I think just sitting, there's a book by Henry Nouwen, it's called Practicing the Presence or something like that. Anyway, it's what?
The presence of God. Practicing the presence of God?
Yes. So his Henry Nouwen's theory is that as Christians, just our presence. Not saying anything, but just being present. Shutting off our cell phones, you know, all that, and just being present. Just sit there and listen and be present. To the person. And there's something about that. I think there is a ministry of presence. I'm convinced there is. Not particularly related, but I said something about special needs being more than just, you know, sometimes what we think it is. Early on in my ministry, I got a call one evening as I was eating my dinner that a woman who was very active in a church, her husband had been in the hospital, and he'd been released that day, and they went in, and he was home, and so they had dinner together. He got up from the table, went in the bedroom, and shot himself. And she was in the hospital, shock and all this. I remember driving to the hospital, and it was like, Lord, I have no idea what I'm going to say or do. I don't. And so I just went in, and not by purpose. I mean, it wasn't my purpose. The Lord intervened, and I just sat there and held her hand. And afterwards, she said, that's exactly what I need, just someone to sit with me, not trying to justify why this would happen, or just sit and hold her hand. And then I asked if I could pray with her, and she said, oh, yes, of course. I had a prayer, and that was it, you know? So, yeah, I think that's... I think the ministry of presence is huge. So, prayers for special needs, pray for and pray with. Just a picture that I thought was interesting. Just kind of, I mean, I don't know, is this woman praying or is she just kind of given up or is she so upset? I don't know. Pray for those with terminal illness, handicapped individuals, special needs individuals and their families. Pray that God would give you an opportunity to minister and show his grace and love to those who find it hard to grasp God's grace in their current situation. Pray God would give you an opportunity to minister and show his grace in love to those who are in a place where they having a real rough time grasping God's grace and his love. And we've all been there. Probably all of us have been there to that. I've been in that place. My wife, well, was having a stroke previous to that, had ovarian cancer. And I was much younger then, and it was, I couldn't believe God would do that to a pastor's wife. You know? I mean, that shouldn't happen to pastors and their wives, you know? And I was really, there was a time I couldn't grasp his grace and his love in the midst of all that. Getting the call from the doctor that says, oh, yes, your wife has ovarian cancer. And it's going to be surgery and you need to go to Dana-Farber and all that stuff. You know, so probably most of us have been in that place. It's just so hard to grasp God's love, his grace and love in that situation, you know? And God taught me that pastors aren't exempt from having bad things happen to them. And if you're a pastor in here, you probably have those experiences. You know, you're not exempt from that. I thought somehow by going to seminary and all that, God shouldn't be treating me that way, you know? Having that prayer, that starting off with praying that God would give you an opportunity to minister in the midst of that. How can I minister in that? And that's a tough one. This was a quote, not mine, and I should have put who it was by, but I don't remember. Pray that we may live life not by our fears, but by our hopes. Dave, you kind of talked about that fear of getting involved and all this, and living life not by our fears. Supposedly, I haven't counted, but supposedly there are 365 places in the Bible where God says, do not fear. I don't know if that's true, but I read that someplace. So, and I haven't gone back and counted. It may have to do with whichever translation you use or whatever. Why is it that God's so concerned about us not living in fear? Any ideas? What does fear do to us?
Robs us of trust.
Yeah. Can paralyze us, can it? Leads into depression and, you know, I have a woman right now who's dealing with multiple health issues and this fear of these health issues consumes her life. She has no other life outside the fears. And probably many of you have seen that. families dealing with special needs. That's not who you are. You're a family, right? You're a family. When my wife had the ovarian cancer, she said, and everyone was just trying to be really helpful, and my wife tends to be kind of an introvert. She was like, I don't want people to keep talking about my cancer, okay? I'm a person, you know? Cancer doesn't define me. My health issues don't define me, right? Not to God. So, you know, fear is crippling. Fear is so destructive. So can we live life not by our fears, but by our hopes? Hope in the Lord? I don't really like this. So I put it in. Prayer. So, anything on prayer? Praying with? Praying for? One of the things I do want to say about prayer, and I'm so guilty of this, I had someone share with me last week at Crotchet Mountain. This man has cerebral palsy. He works in the IT department at Crotchet Mountain. And I was walking by his office, and he asked if I'd come in. So I went in, and Mike shared with me some issues they're having with their son and so on. And I said, well, I'll pray for you. I'll pray for your son. And then I'm like, why didn't I pray right there? Next time I'm up there, I'm going to his office. I said, I want to pray with you right now. You know? So often, for me, it's, you know, I had a task that at that particular time, I wanted to see the head of IT about my phone not working in my office and all that. And he calls me in, you know, and it's like, I'll pray for you. Should have prayed right then. Wouldn't I? So listen, prayer, and then ministry actions.
On prayer?
Yes.
I've found, to my own horror, that sometimes I'll say things in prayer that I wouldn't say to them if I'm thinking about the situation.
Yeah.
And so just particularly to be mindful of how we pray and to have walked through some of those unintentional barbs or, you know, it reveals what we really think about disabilities. And so that whole thing of guarding our heart and thinking through just when we pray, are we praying in ways that are going to be encouraging and edifying?
Yes, that's a great point. Because sometimes I can get have a prayer and then I'm, you know, it's kind of like in the midst of the prayer, I can't believe I just, that's what you're talking about. I can't believe I just said that in prayer or prayed that. And then it's kind of like, how do I get out of it now? What can I pray now that's going to help that I, yes.
I think we've always told ourselves we need to be prepared to evangelize. You know, we always say, have your elevator speech ready. Somebody says, I like what you got, how can I get it? But to your point, we need to be on the spot ready to pray with someone too. I work at a Christian radio station and I get phone calls. And I don't know who's on the other end. I may never have contact with them again. So I have to be ready to pray with them at that moment and address their need. And I think that's something we need to keep as much in the forefront as the need to evangelize.
Yes. I agree. Yeah. And Crotchet Mountain Center is it's not a Christian place. It's a secular place. And one of the issues is, I was talking about the ethnically diverse workforce, is now we have a very diverse religious population. So we have Muslims, we have Hindus. That's a challenge. That's a challenge.
Do you find they're offended, though, if you pray to your God for them? I haven't found that yet.
Yeah, I think that's much more of a concern of the CEO than it is of those folks.
Okay.
I mean, I sent out a prayer to the whole of the mountain on the mass shooting in California. And I got probably 8 or so replies back, some of those being from folks I know who are Christians, some didn't know, but thanking. I took a little step outside because the CEO and so on might not... I mean, I might get called in next week. yeah.
You'll see what your title is next.
Yeah. Well, they just moved my office, so next time they might be out into the parking lot. I do find that. You know, if I went to Iran, I would expect that prayers would be, as a Muslim, prayers would be offered, but, you know, and I would enter in or not. But I don't think that would offend me. But for some reason, we're into this thing today that the whole political correctness thing, or you can't pray. The CEO did this, nothing to do with this. I'm getting sidetracked here. But CEO did call me in, and because I do prayers at graduation, and said... I really don't think you ought to be praying in Jesus' name. Because we have a very diverse workforce, and that might offend someone. I really struggled with that. Should I... I mean, one of my thoughts was, I just go back in and say, sorry, I guess you need to look for someone else for a chaplain. You know, should I do that? Which... probably there wouldn't be a search for another chaplain. It just wouldn't exist anymore. What do you do? You know, struggle with those things when you're in a secular setting. Yeah. So, yes.
I'm just thinking about prayer, and something that's come to mind is pray the promises with them. Don't pray the problems, because they're already so stuck on the problems. Lately, with my families that have disability, like, and I just pray the problems with them.
Yes.
Over them.
Yes. 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 That's a great point. Don't pray the problems. Pray the promises. That in the midst of all this, whether we understand it or not, God's faithful to be with us. You know, Johnny's song, "Alone but Not Alone." You know. You may feel like you're alone, but you know, God's promises that he's with you. You may not understand that. You may not even feel his presence, but he's there. And his presence isn't always about feeling it. You know, he's there. That's a promise he's made. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So, listening, praying, and then what do we do? Are there any actions we can take? Always be welcoming. Do your best to make sure no one feels like a burden. I had a mom say to me at Crotchet Mountain, she was a Christian. She attended our church, which, as I said, we worship there in the auditorium and conference center. She said, every other place we've gone, and she didn't necessarily just mean churches, my son is seen as a problem. And I come here, and he's seen as a person. I thought, wow, that's it, isn't it? You know, a person created in the image of God, not a problem to be solved. And could you believe that, what Liz said about the church?
Yeah, that's...
issuing, having horrifying. A restraining order issued to keep a family from coming? I'm just like, you've got to be kidding. Really? You know? But I've read some horror stories online about folks who have gone into churches and been told that you're not welcome here. You know, be welcoming. Ministry is messy. Whatever ministry you do, it's messy. You know, and if you don't want to be messy, then don't do ministry. Don't, you know, just be comfortable doing whatever you're doing. We've had some real challenges since moving our worship to the auditorium and conference center at the Crotchet Mountain Center. We've had people leave. I had one couple who came to me and said, sorry, we're not going to be able to come here anymore, but we just can't worship with these people. Now, I had to be very pastoral, I thought. There were some things I wanted to say. The humanness in me wanted to say some things. I didn't. And my wife has to keep reminding me that, you know, I've had 30 years of ministry there, and not everyone has had an experience of being in a place with people with disabilities. We've had young man. I have a time with the children. He came down to that. He's in a wheelchair. And he didn't want to leave the front, so his staff took him anyway to the back, and somehow he was able to unbuckle himself from the wheelchair, and he rolled down the center aisle, and then didn't want to leave. Our congregation has got pretty used to some of this. I could tell you lots of other stories. I looked at them really funny. I'll tell you just one. This woman who was in her late 20s, she'd been at Crotchet Mountain for a very long time, like 15 years, had always come and worshipped with us, and most of the time did okay with that. But one Sunday she comes in, she always sat right down front, she comes in and she had a wardrobe malfunction and her pants fell down. As we're worshiping, as we're doing praise songs. I was like, oh no, you know. But I thought, am I going to hear about that? I didn't hear one thing from the congregation about that. I was amazed. Of course, staff got right around, and some of them had a shirt or something they had around the room, and so on. But it's messy. It's messy. And, yeah. So, we should be welcoming. There are times that it's going to be difficult. And we've had those times. You know, so, making sure, I mean, you really wouldn't think you should have to tell Christian leaders this, that you don't make people feel like a burden. After I hear the restraining order and read some of the stories, I'm like, oh, wow, maybe we do need, you know. Not a burden. You're not a problem. You're a person created in the image of God. That's, you know, like all of us, you know.
On the welcoming piece, I'm trying to learn better how to welcome people in their native language, or I'm becoming more aware of for certain folks on the spectrum, for instance, that getting in their space or, you know, what I would think of as welcoming, they perceive in an entirely different way. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, how do you navigate that? How do you learn what's welcoming and what's not?
You're in New England. That's why.
It's what? What'd you say? New England.
I know Doug personally.
Oh, okay. That's, I try to follow their cues. Now, for example, people at Crotchet, well, which is a little very different situation than maybe going into another worship experience somewhere else, but there's staff. So, like this the woman I was talking about who had the wardrobe malfunction, she eventually had to leave Crotchet because she just became too out of control and refused medications and all this, and Crotchet felt they couldn't deal with all this. So I get an email on this. Megan's going to be leaving. And so I was like, oh, well, we need to do something in worship about this then. You know, we need to say goodbye and tell her, you know, we're going to miss her and all this. Well, the Lord intervened there because that set her off. I mean, it would have. So she and a staff person come in, and I'm like, well, Megan, I hear you're leaving. And the staff's like, no, don't. I thought that was a good thing, you know. But I thought, oh, thank you, Lord, that, you know, that I got that cue beforehand, because that would not have been a good picture. That would not have been a good thing. So trying to just figure out how, and I think if I'm attempting to be welcoming, people are pretty understanding when I mess up. You know, if my purpose is to welcome, you know, and not make anybody feel like a burden, you know. I don't know signing. I wished I did. I took a class at Crotchet years ago, and I flunked out. I mean, I just left because I was thought, well, I can go in there and I can learn in no time. Well, I found it's pretty complicated, for me at least, it was, the whole signing thing. And so we have a young man who's deaf, and I just, you know, I wished I knew. So I have to talk through the staff as to, you know, he does read lips a little bit, so on. But, I think if you're trying, and that's evident, then even if you mess up, you get something in.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that if someone is cognitively able to have a conversation and answer your question, ask them.
Right.
You know, so we're out with, you know, out and about in the community, and, you know, some kids, little kids may just look, or, you know, they're afraid, or, you know, we just try to be welcoming. If I'm doing the ramp on my van, I'll say to a little, you know, 6 or 8 years, hey, you want to press the button, you know, and just make it comfortable. But Ben and Sam will always say, I'd rather have somebody just ask me, hey, how can I help you, or do you need help, you know, just say yes or no. And if they can't answer, then family members or staff person.
But what not to do is to talk to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if someone's in a wheelchair, I've seen people make this assumption, well, then I'm going to talk to the parent. Making some assumptions about the cognitive abilities and all this, which is foolishness. You talk to Sam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dave.
I really like what you said about watching for cues. Mm-hmm. I think there are some people that are good at looking for cues, and some of the rest of us need to learn a lot. If you watch, you can get cues about how a person wants to be welcomed, or not.
Absolutely. Yes.
Could you talk maybe a little bit about being welcoming? I mean, we may be very good welcoming in our words and with the way that we approach people, but the way that we arrange our buildings and the accessibility issues in our buildings, we could be a very welcoming congregation, but if people either can't get into our buildings or they don't have a space to go when they're in our buildings, that can send you're a burden in a different sort of way.
Absolutely. Because we don't care enough to make our buildings accessible, and we don't have accessible restrooms. I mean, one of the reasons we left our old building to worship at Crotchet Mountain was the sanctuary was in a building that was built in 1795. It was upstairs, one of the old meeting houses in New England. Not many of those left, but it was upstairs. Even though we had one of these chair things that's chair lifts, whatever they are, people in wheelchairs couldn't get up there. And once you got up there, there was no restroom on the second floor. There was nothing. And it's a beautiful space. Stained glass windows and all this stuff. And but people couldn't get into it, you know, and we wanted to have a place that people could get into. So obviously the auditorium and conference center, Cratchit, we have all, you know, it's all accessible, all of that. Look at the messages we're sending. And is there a place where, you know, someone was just telling me a church they were in and they actually had a sensory kind of room. Someone was telling me about that this morning. Hey, that's pretty neat to have a place where someone could go that's really having, because sometimes large groups or maybe the music's, the loudness of the music, whatever, just is overwhelming and that person needs a place to go to just take some deep breaths and be away from it all for a while and then can come back in.
And I think the point is you can't wait until there's a need to do something. In other words, you can't be reactionary.
Right.
There has to be a proactive nature to ministry,
right,
to families with disability. As a pastor, sometimes getting a congregation on board with something that has not yet happened, but
right,
you would like to see, but you want to be
right
accessible, can be the hardest thing to navigate.
So our worship space on the second floor, curved staircase, all steep staircase to the second floor, no restroom on the second floor, and people said, well, we don't have any people with disabilities here, so why do we need to do anything? Well, that's what you're talking about. It's like, well, of course we don't have people with disabilities. They can't get up here. Or when they did, we had to get them out of the wheelchair, lift them onto this chair lift, take the wheelchair up, get them off the chair lift, onto the back into the wheelchair, and then there were three steps up into the worship space and all this. I mean, yeah, of course we don't have any people with disabilities because they can't get into the building. They can't get up here. But to get people on board with that, that's a hard one. How do you get people on board to say, this is something we need to do? Because that's what I got was, well, look, we don't have any people with disabilities here, so why do we have to worry about that? Yeah.
Yeah, if you call Johnny and friends, they can get a bunch of us to come visit.
I think I'm running out of time. Two more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Be aware that you are not aware of the struggles special needs families face each day. That's kind of get to know people, get their story. Don't assume. You know, I always think, last week I preached on blind Bartimaeus. And Jesus does this with other people too. Bartimaeus is blind, and Jesus says, what do you want me to do for you? Well, first, Jesus already knew, and isn't it pretty obviously the guy's blind, a blind beggar, you know? Why'd Jesus do that? Why would he ask what would seem like a really foolish question? I think it's because in we need to verbalize. There's something healing in just verbalizing. So I can't assume, had a family, I can't assume what people need. And so I think the church does that a lot. We go in, we say, well, I know what they need. We'll take them this and this and this. And that's not what they need at all. And people have a right to say no. You know? So my wife and I, or actually it was my wife more than me, she roasted a chicken for this family and the wife, and they're in their late 70s, early 80s. She became addicted to pain medication and almost died from it. So then they said no more pain medication, and well, she now has dementia and so on. But anyway, my wife said, well, you know, we need to do something for these folks. So she did roasted a chicken, and she did mashed potato and vegetable. I call up, and the husband says, no, don't bring it. We don't want that. Really? You don't want this? No, I don't. Mm-hmm. We won't eat it. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't know why. So we had our dinner that day. But maybe it would have been better if I had called him and said,
what can we do for you? What would be really helpful to you?
Rather than assuming it was a meal, which they didn't want. How can I do that? So I think, don't assume. Ask. What do you need? You know, how can I help? And share encouraging words, affirm the family. Every person needs to hear positive comments, especially special needs families. You said about the promises, praying the promises. Yeah, you need positive stuff. You know, you hear enough negative stuff. I was talking to someone earlier this morning that I don't know if you've experienced this, but like when my wife had cancer, it was like people would tell her the worst case scenarios. Oh yeah, we had a friend that had ovarian cancer, and you know what? She went through this horrible time, and then she died. Oh, that's encouraging. Thank you. You know, and people do that. I don't know what that's about. Be encouraging. Okay? Don't whisper and gossip. You know, look at the way that person acts or that child behaves or whatever. Okay? And help educate others. Help educate other people in your church, in your congregation. That's a great picture. We can't assume others in our sphere of influence have had exposure to special needs families. I told you that my wife keeps having to remind me of that because I get really impatient with people. And she's like, remember, you've been there 30 years. They haven't had that kind of experience. You know, cut them a little slack. People may be fearful, uncomfortable, not knowing what to say, how to act. I hear that all the time. I don't know what to say to somebody in a wheelchair. I don't know what to say to someone who's blind. You know? Well, say what you would to anybody else. Use opportunities to educate others, to show compassion, understanding, and kindness. And provide services to special needs families. What are some things? Ask in what ways you can help out. Do not assume that you know what the need is. You may not know what the need is. You probably don't know what the need is. Never, never say, let me know if there is anything I can do. I do that too. And that's why it's up there. You know, rather than to say, how can I help? Say, no, you know what? If you ever think of anything I can do, give me a call. Because people probably aren't going to call. Offer to provide a meal, a gift certificate to a restaurant that has good takeout, provide transportation, can I help taking you to the doctors, to therapy appointments, any ministry actions you can suggest? And we're out of time. Treat others the way you want to be treated. And love your neighbor as yourself. Yes.
Ministry suggests we found a lot of people like is spend time with their person who has disabilities so they can
get a break. Yeah. The 48-hour day. Yes, yep. Yes. Yeah, give them a break. How can I help? Yes. Yep. That's it. That's it. We're a little bit late.
Thank you.
But thank you. You were great. Good discussion. If you have any questions you want to ask, I'll be here for a couple minutes picking my stuff up, so I'd be glad to. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And pray God blesses your ministry to folks with special needs, whatever those special needs are. Thank you.
My daughter-in-law works at Crotchet.
Your what?
My daughter-in-law.
Your daughter-in-law works at?
Yes.
Where does she work?
She's
in the school?
She's a pathologist.
Okay, so she works in the school, yeah. She's pretty happy there?
Oh, yeah. She's had some...
challenges.